Somebody's Luggage, a collection of themed short stories by Charles Dickens and other Victorian writers. Eminent London headwaiter Mr. Christopher has discovered and purchased a mysterious set of luggage that had been abandoned by its owner in the private hotel and dining establishment where he works. In specific items of the luggage, there is a set of handwritten papers, each containing a different story written by the luggage's owner, who is known only to Mr. Christopher as Somebody. Episode 3. Discovered in his dressing case. The story of the iceberg shipwreck. Written by Arthur Locker.
Homeward bound from Melbourne, my fellow passengers on board the good ship Golden Dream were beginning to get rather weary and tired of their trip. We were only in the fourth week of the voyage, but the month was July. The days were short, gloomy, and stormy, and the sea was covered in those mountainous waves that are seen in perfection off Cape Horn. The stout ship went struggling along in a fierce northeasterly gale, quivering like a living creature as the remorseless waves struck her, blow after blow. We were barely making 2 knots an hour. A sudden chill in the air and a peculiar white glare on the horizon told us that we were surrounded by icebergs. Before nightfall, the wind's violence had abated, and the passengers hurried on deck to look at the first iceberg that was within half a mile of us. An enormous mass of rock-like ice, fully 300 feet high, was brilliant white, except in the deep fissures and gaps where the colour changed to a cobalt blue. And the summits glowed in the rainbow rays of the setting sun.
Well, it's a pretty sight, a very pretty sight. But I wish they'd all sink to the bottom at night and come up again in the morning.
It will be very convenient indeed, ma'am. It would save our eyes considerably, for we shall have to keep a bright lookout.
It was Tom White, an able seaman and one of the greatest growlers on board. We passed a very gloomy evening. The wind had almost become calm, but the sea continued to run extremely high, causing the ship to roll terribly.
Damn! Blast!
Everything that was not securely fixed was flying about the cabin, and the steward spent the interval between supper and bedtime in a state of despair, chasing cups and saucers and bottles. For myself, I went on deck to find some shelter and solace in a pipe smoke.
Nasty thick night, sir.
What do you think of the weather, Tom?
About as bad as it can be. If it had kept on to blow, it might have took us through all this here ice. But now it's fallen calm, the icebergs will gather round the ship just as the bits of stick in a pond get round a dead cat. Let me set foot on shore once more, and you'll never catch me round the Horn again.
I hope they're keeping a bright lookout forward.
A bright lookout? How can they? Why, the night's as thick as a tub of Dutch butter. And then it ain't these big lumps as I'm afeard of. If the lookouts ain't asleep, they might chance to see them. What I fear is the nasty little sneaking bits of ground ice about the size of a ship's longboat.
Surely they would not injure a stout ship like this.
Stout ship? Why, this is a soft wood ship. She'd have no chance agin the ice. And then with all this copper ore inside her, down she'd go. And you along with her.
And you too, Tom.
Well, I don't know about that. Sailors ain't like passengers. There's the boats to cut adrift. Besides, I'm on deck and you'd be below, smothered like a rat in a hole.
Tom White disappeared into the darkness, leaving me in a very uncomfortable frame of mind. I eventually determined to go below to my cabin and seek oblivion from danger in sleep. I envied my cabin companion, a large German named Schlaffenbohl. He lay in profound slumber while his nose trumpeted defiance to the elements. I clambered up to my berth over the German's head and tried to think of everything I could recall to help me sleep. 652, 653, 654. In a few seconds, the porthole that had been at my side was directly above my head. I unscrewed the port and thrust my head out to discover the ship on its side, with the masts disappearing rapidly beneath the angry sea. Still in my clothes, I managed to climb through the portal, just, and lay clinging to the wet, slippery side of the vessel. Should I wake Schlaffenbohl? No, his ample figure could never pass through the narrow portal. I might lose my own life endeavouring to save him. The vessel was sinking rapidly, and there was something else. It was an immense iceberg crashing against the ship's side. I summoned all of my energies to jump. From a small cavity of the iceberg, I looked around again. The Golden Dreamin had disappeared totally, with only a few dark objects floating on the water. Possibly the casks on the deck filled with beef and pork had broken free. I descended cautiously through the thick darkness to a ledge directly over the water. Oh, if I could only get slightly nearer. Ah! Oh, it's a hand gripping mine for dear life. Hold on. Who are you?
I am
Julius Schlaffenbohl. Why, good heaven, how came you here?
Very easily, my friend. You see, I am a good diver and swimmer, and I took my time about it.
Why, you've got a long rope tied around your body.
Pull hard on it and see what you bring up.
It's a case!
You see, I am never in a hurry. When the ship turned over, I turned out of my bed myself, and then I think to myself, Julius, food. So I filled this box with provisions and swam quietly up the cabin stairs.
My dear Schlaffenbohl, how delighted I am to have been the means of saving your life.
Well, I don't know about that. I could have saved myself. You see, my friend, the food is just enough for one, but no more.
My noble fellow, do not harbour such selfish thoughts. Remember, we are brothers in adversity and should help each other.
What can you help me to?
I've nothing, but... Yes, I have a pound of tobacco. I brought it today from the steward, and here it is, safe in my pocket.
Yo, Vivolera, that is just what I have not got. Yes, my friend, we will swear brothership and share our goods together.
Agreed.
Good.
Schlaffenbohl laid himself down with a pillow of snow and was presently snoring as tranquilly as if in his own beloved fatherland, with a featherbed of the finest down to cover him. I sat down on a corner of icy rock and took the liberty of resting my semi-frozen feet on his expansive body. I soon began to feel more comfortable and lit a pipe and matches from my waterproof case and anxiously awaited the coming of daylight. As I sat, I began to reflect on my hardness of heart. I had not bestowed a thought on the rest of the passengers or on the crew, and yet they had probably all perished. But they had met with a sudden and speedy death, whereas I was doomed to a slow and lingering torture. What prospect of rescue remained when the last fragment of the iceberg should rumble away under the ceaseless action of the waves? Another and far greater probability was yet more appalling. The durability of the iceberg could far outlast our food store. Two human beings floating at the mercy of the wind and the waves, glaring at one another with famine-stricken eyes. It would become necessary to draw lots and decide who should slay the other. Oh, horrible! I withdrew my feet hastily from the German's body and fell asleep.
O Tannenbaum, O Tannenbaum, wie trotz in deiner Blätter die grundsnickdürse Sommer seid, neunack im Winter, wenn es schneit. O Tannenbaum, wie trotz in deiner Blätter.
When I awoke, it was broad daylight. We were staying in a small valley surrounded on every side but one by steep rocks of slippery ice, and thus completely sheltered from the piercing wind. The sound I could hear was Schlaffenwohl, a few paces along in the corner, industriously combing out his flaxen beard and singing.
Ha ha! Guten Morgen, Munkhaus!
We breakfasted on a couple of sardines and half a biscuit, drinking from one of the rills that trickled down the slowly melting rocks. With the assistance of a pocket knife and the lid of a box, I then manufactured a pair of sandals to protect my feet from the chilling surface ice.
What to do now, my friend?
I believe we need to climb upwards to assess the extent of the iceberg.
Yeah, it's good.
After 2 hours of hard work, cutting steps with knives for our feet, we reached the summit. The panorama was grand in the extreme. 300 feet above a sea studded at intervals with icebergs of every shape and size. Our own was about a mile in circumference, with a series of ridges and valleys. We were standing, as it were, in the centre of a gigantic starfish, whose 7 rays were 7 rocky backbones, with a deep and sheltered valley between each. The German peered over the edge of the deep valley below.
Mr. Munkhaus, I wish you would look over into our valley.
Why?
I think somebody in our absence may be plundering our food store. Will you oblige me by looking? I am too stout to venture. What do you see?
You were right.
Gott in Himmel! Schweinhunds, follow me!
Hey, you, stop!
Why, you, Tom White, you are no better than a thief! That is my box.
This ain't your private bread. That's ship's bread. Ain't it, Bill Atkins?
Aye, sir. Besides, you'd never go for to keep all this tucker for your cheek. Why, there's a parcel of women and children in the next holly to this has had no breakfast yet.
What? More people saved?
Course there is. When the iceberg drifted alongside, me and Bill here stood on the bulwarks as the ship heeled over and passed the passengers in as nicely as if we was off Blackwall Pier. There may be a lot more for aught I know in t'other valleys. I've been busy navigating the ship.
Navigating the ship? What do you mean?
Why, I've got a pocket compass here. We're steering nor'east by nor' and going at 13 knots. If this breeze lasts another 24 hours, we shall go smack into the Falkland Islands.
What has become of the skipper and the other officers?
I don't know. They may be aboard the berg and they mayn't. I'm the only able seaman on here that I know of, so I've took the command. Now, Mr. Monkhouse, if you'll please take your orders from me. I can see you're a sharp chap by the way you've made them ice shoes. Go up to the masthead and see what you can make of the other valleys. The next one to this I know all about. That's my headquarters.
Aye, sir. Are you coming, Schlaffenwohl?
Nein.
On reaching the masthead, as Tom called it, I chose a valley and descended quite comfortably to the bottom, and encountered more company, only some of which was human.
Oh my gosh! Oh my dear! Oh my word!
The old lady who I had spoken to the previous evening was sat, crouching on the ground, in a state of the utmost terror, holding a large green umbrella over her head, with close beside her an enormous walrus, blinking sleepily.
What shall I do?
I quickly fastened a rope around Mrs. Robinson's waist and proceeded to toil her up the slope using the umbrella as a stick, eventually reaching the summit. Aided by Bill Atkins, we lowered her safely by cable into the Women and Children's Valley.
Mr. Monkhouse, we must have that walrus. Even if we can't eat his flesh, we can make a roaring bonfire of his blubber. The poor women and children are perishing with cold.
Three or four of us, armed with knives and staves, descended into the valley. Unfortunately, as soon as he saw us approach, the walrus turned over and rolled into the sea.
Ah, never mind the walrus, boys. She's going 15 knots if she's going an inch. Mr. Monkhouse, you ain't seen the skipper.
No, there are no signs of him.
Well, if he was aboard, I guarantee to bring him in safe. And he couldn't do better nor what I am doing now.
What Tom White was doing to assist our progress, it would be hard to say, though he himself firmly believed that everything depended on his exertions. Evening was coming on.
Mr. Monkhouse, you're the best hand I've got aboard ship. How do you feel about the legs?
Rather stiff.
Bill Atkins, serve out a tot of grog to Mr. Monkhouse. It's very precious liquor, for we've only got one bottle aboard, but he deserves every drop. Now, I want you to go aloft again and look out for land.
Aye, aye, sir.
Aha! My word! Land ho!
Where away?
To windward, sir!
All right! Stop aloft and see what it looks like as we get nearer.
A furious gale was now blowing from south-southwest, making me crouch on hands and knees to avoid being hurled into one of the chasms beneath. Our watchful commander presently came aloft.
Port Stevens! By all that's merciful, it lies in the southwest corner of the main island. Now comes the ticklish time. If we touch the rocks on either side, we shall be knocked to splinters.
The excitement on board the iceberg was intense. Just as night fell, we entered the harbour. Had our gallant craft been steered by the most skillful helmsman in the British Navy, she could not have kept a better course. Tom White rubbed his hands with delight. As soon as we were inside the harbour, the wind abated and we grounded on an extensive sandbank, where we were obliged to wait patiently during the night. Never in my life did I feel so glad to see the day dawn.
Look, there are the boats.
Where is the captain?
I am the captain.
Then perhaps, sir, you will have the kindness to arrange your people in detachments.
Tom bustled about with great pomp, looking fully 2 inches taller after having been called sir so politely.
Are these all your crew and passengers, captain?
All, your worship. The others has met a watery grave.
Beg your pardon, sir, but there's a lot more people t'other side of the berg.
A rush of boats gave way to the spot indicated and presently returned with the captain and all his senior crew. It seemed we had searched 6 valleys of the iceberg, but had omitted to examine the 7th. Poor Tom White. I believe he was a kind-hearted fellow and well pleased to find that not a single life had been sacrificed on board the Golden Dream. And yet, I am sure he was sorry to see the captain again. He was silent on the way to the shore, his head hung down and looking much depressed. In the evening, however, under the influence of a liberal libation of grog, he recovered his spirits and described his manner of navigating the iceberg into port.
in terms that I think no Falkland Islander will ever forget. We were all placed on board a Californian trader bound for New York. Here I parted from Schlaffenbohl, who had determined to settle in the United States. There was some coolness between us. I had positively declined to share a cabin with him on account of his snoring, and the worthy German was offended. On reaching London, I at once forwarded a written statement of our extraordinary escape to the committee at Lloyd's, the insurers, authenticated by Tom White's mark. A few days later, I received a requisition from the committee.
Pray, Mr. Monkhouse, is your family of German origin?
No, sir. We have been settled for centuries in East Kent.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I thought the name Monkhouse might have been a corruption of the name of a certain Baron Munchausen, whose extraordinary adventures have long been known to the public. For certainly none of your account of these events is in the least part credible. Dismissed!
I'm the only able seaman on here that I know of, so I've took the command. Bill Atkins, serve out a tot of grog to Mr. Monkhouse. I am the captain. Now, I want you to go aloft again and look out for land. I've been busy navigating the ship.
So Tom White never did receive the recognition for his efforts aboard the iceberg that he thought he deserved.
From the high southern seas, the next story in Somebody's Luggage moves to Victorian London and the strange, oblique world of art and fine artists. Episode 3 of Somebody's Luggage, the story of the iceberg shipwreck, showcased blockbuster acting turns from Mike Ravano as Monkhouse and the salty old sea dog Tom White, played by Mike Ayres. Mr. Richard Vince provided a distinctive Germanic presence as Schlaffenbohl, complemented well by Mark Smith as Bill Atkins the sailor and S.J. Vance, Mrs. Robinson. All other parts were played by members of this cast and production team. The episode was adapted, produced and directed by Jim Newberry with sound and effects pyrotechnics, orchestrated masterfully by Robbie Burgess. It is a joint venture between Revenge FM and Uptick Productions.